Please join me in the spirit of prayer. Let us not sleep through this holiday season. We don't get a lot of holiday kits. These do-it-yourself or do-it-together chances to come alive. Let us not miss this one. It isn't belief that would keep us out. For hardly anyone would even know how to believe the many fantastic parts of all the holiday stories. It's in many ways such a simple season. Lights, candles, music, costumes, decorations, lots of good food, chances to be present with people we don't make time for most of the year. And throughout the holidays, getting together is mostly a chance not to have political fights, or once more go down our favorite list of what's wrong with the world, but a time to try and recapture what's right with the world and with our lives and with the people who matter to us or the people we wish were more a part of our lives. It's an easy excuse this Christmas season, even a socially acceptable excuse, to mend bridges, to send an unexpected gift, to wish someone well, to reestablish connections. Let's not get so distracted by all the hoopla of the season that we forget that it's offering us another chance to get caught up in one another and caught up in being alive. Amen. Christmas is really quite a new holiday. In our country, it only caught on after the war between the states, or as some of you longtime Texans put it, the war of Yankee aggression. And in spite of all the hype about Christmas as a religious holiday, many Christians still don't accept it as having anything to do with their faith. Modern Jehovah's Witnesses and other fundamentalists still see Christmas as a pagan holiday celebrating the winter solstice. They note that Jesus didn't tell people to celebrate his birthday in his Sermon on the Mount. And in Boston, a fundamentalist religious group has run advertisements in the subway proclaiming that early Christians did not, quote, believe in lies about Santa Claus, flying reindeer, elves, and drunken parties. They don't mention that early Christians didn't celebrate Christmas either, or that they didn't have any idea when Jesus was born, or that Jesus also never counseled people to engage in self-righteous games of putting other people down. It's kind of ironic, but almost nothing that people really love about Christmas has anything to do with Christianity or with Jesus. Yet people have been celebrating at this time of year, the winter solstice, since prehistoric times. Though I think even the winter solstice is mostly an excuse rather than a reason for what goes on this season. In our modern calendar, the solstice happens on the 21st or 22nd of December, though in the old Julian calendar, it sometimes came on December 25th, and it was identified with December 25th as far back as the 3rd century, when the Romans had their week-long Saturnalia and the festivals celebrating the birth of the invincible sun. That's S-U-N. As far as we can tell, observations and celebrations of this season probably go back at least 10,000 years, maybe more. Thousands of years before any of today's religions had been born. In some ancient mythologies, the great mother goddess gave birth to a new sun god on that day. That's poetry. Sun gods are pictured with a glow of light or a halo around their heads. So Again, ironically, most of the paintings of Jesus portray him in the stylized way that solar deities were portrayed. The solstice was celebrated in many other cultures at this time, and by definition, that 25th of December had to be the birthday of all sun gods, of whom there were many. If you go to Wikipedia, you can find more than 100 solar deities, all of whom are born again each year at the winter solstice, though most of those gods have long since been forgotten. Gods who last a few hundred or 1,000 years have really lasted a very long time as gods go. So while over 100 different religious cults and sects and rituals are known, each one of them was a kind of cover story over the real reason for the season, which didn't have anything to do with all those local and temporary deities. In another 12 days, we'll have the shortest day and the longest night of the year. Leaves have died and fallen from a lot of trees. It's been getting dark earlier, and it's been getting light later in the days. I suppose that if we were living through this for the first time, we might think the world was slowly coming to an end, and the light might just continue disappearing until it was completely gone, maybe. But this isn't the season of hoping the sun will come back. And it hasn't been for thousands of years. It's the time of knowing full well that the sun will come back. After all, they knew exactly which date to plan their parties on every year. And Stonehenge, which was built about 4,000 years ago, was built to precisely frame the rays of the sun on the dates of the winter solstice and summer solstice. They weren't guessing. They knew it was going to happen again. They knew the days would get longer, and they knew that we're in the hands of Mother Nature, and she'll always give birth to the light again. It's what she does. This is our home, and it's a safe place. And they knew it even all those thousands of years ago. Now, in the 4th century, the Emperor Constantine, a complex character, whose religion was really Mithraism, he wanted to combine Mithraism and Christianity and kind of be the head of both of them. So he gave Christians protection from prosecution. They'd had a lot of prosecution in the 2nd and 3rd centuries. But then he assigned them Mithras's birthday, December 25th, since Mithras was a sun god, and he assigned that to be Jesus' birthday. And he also assigned them the holy day of Mithraism. And since it's a sun god, that's Sunday. We're still meeting on Mithras' holy day. Until then, Christians didn't have a holy day, and Jesus didn't have a birthday. You can read 2nd and 3rd century Christian writers, and they absolutely brag that Christianity has no holy days, that all days are equal, unlike those horrible pagans who named days after their gods. In the 4th century, they became one. So it's a funny mix. But even then, Christmas didn't start. Because from the start, Christians wouldn't buy it. Even 1,700 years ago, they knew it was a pagan holiday about a sun god, so the day was not an important day for Christians from the start. And a lot of people are surprised to learn that Christmas wasn't an important day in modern times either. In England, in the 17th century, the Christian Oliver Cromwell ordered people put in jail if they were caught celebrating that pagan holiday. And when the Puritans came to America, they wouldn't allow the celebration of Christmas because they too knew their history. Our Congress was in session on December 25th, 1789, the first Christmas under our new Constitution. Christmas was a normal work day. Christmas didn't start catching on in our country until the last third of the 19th century, and then it had almost nothing to do with Jesus and almost everything to do with Santa Claus. In 1822, a dentist named Clement Moore wrote the poem we know as The Night Before Christmas. It's still a magical poem, and it became immensely popular. That's the poem you all know about the visit of old St. Nicholas flying up onto the rooftop in his sleigh pulled by 8 reindeer, slipping down the chimney to bring presents to the children. Then as he flew away, calling out, "Merry Christmas to all and to all a good night." Nothing about Jesus or God. Not a religious holiday. Nothing about the winter solstice either. Just jolly old St. Nicholas. Presents and a wonderful, magical atmosphere. After this poem caught on, the Santa Claus story became very popular. Now, Santa Claus at this time, when he was pictured, which wasn't often, he was pictured as an elf. That's how he could get down the chimney. He was an elf. It's true. And if he wasn't pictured as an elf, he was pictured as a tall, very thin man. Then in 1843, a couple things happened. Charles Dickens published The Christmas Carol just the week before Christmas. Now, the U.S. Congress was still meeting on Christmas. They kept meeting on December 25th until 1856. Meanwhile, the Santa Claus story was becoming more popular, and the idea of Christmas as a special day, a day with family, with a big Christmas dinner, that idea caught on over much of the country, especially the South. 2 years after Charles Dickens published his story, in 1836, Alabama was the first state to make Christmas a legal holiday. But from the start, as in ancient times, it was about family and friends and sharing good food together and celebrating. Well, with a very big boost from commercialism, just as in ancient Rome. Christmas cards were also introduced in 1843 in England. They were simple lithographed cards that said Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. The first Christmas cards in the U.S. were used by merchants for advertising. So making money from the season has been part of it since it began, as it was also in ancient Rome. You know, they sold all those greeneries and decorations and drinks and food. Now, we also owe our modern picture of Santa Claus to a cartoonist and a soft drink company. Thomas Nast was the political cartoonist. He was really the first famous political cartoonist in America and still one of the best and one of the most creative. It's amazing, the things he gave us. He was an illustrator for Harper's Weekly from about 1859 to 1886. He was born in 1840, so he started as a teenager, as a cartoonist. And when he was only 23, he gave us during the Civil War, when he was even a little younger in his 20s, he gave us two very famous animals. He gave us the Republican elephant and the Democratic donkey. And then when he was 23, he drew Santa Claus, dressed in a fur-trimmed suit. Up until then, Santa had been tall and thin or an elf. It was Thomas Nast who made him big and fat. He drew the Santa pictures for about 20 years. In Harper's, and they caught on. So he's an interesting cartoonist. He gave us Santa Claus and two political parties. And it's still a safe bet that more people love Santa Claus than those other two animals. And because of all these things, in 1870, Christmas finally became a federal holiday for the first time, though it still had some sloppy edges to it. In 1907, Oklahoma was the last state to make it an official state holiday. But as late as 1931, 9 states still required public schools to remain open on Christmas Day. It was just a regular day, 76 years ago. But this new holiday, as you can tell, didn't have much to do with religion, or with Jesus, or with God, or with the winter solstice. What it seemed to have everything to do with was the ancient festivals and the idea of giving presents. And the gifts, which really weren't part of Christmas to start, the gifts which have become the main point of the season for all children, all advertisers, and many adults, the gifts were actually traditionally given on December 6th. That was St. Nicholas Day, the anniversary of his death. St. Nicholas was a real person, a very wealthy 4th century bishop, though not really a saint. The Catholic Church broke the news to people a couple decades ago that he wasn't really a saint, even though he had more churches named after him than any of the gospel writers. The most famous legend about him is really a nice legend that goes off in several directions, and that goes off in one direction you've seen all your lives and may never have connected with him. It's a story about a poor man and his three daughters. In those days, sort of like today in India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and a lot of other countries, a young woman's father had to offer prospective husbands a dowry, and it needed to be a big one. The larger the dowry, the better the chance that the woman would find a good husband. Without a dowry, a woman was unlikely to marry. The poor man's daughters, without dowries, were therefore destined to be sold into some kind of slavery. Mysteriously, on three different occasions, the story says, a bag of gold appeared in their home, providing their dowries. The bags of gold were tossed through an open window, and they're said to have landed in stockings or shoes that had been left before the fire to dry. This led to the custom of children hanging stockings or putting out shoes, as they do in a lot of European countries, eagerly awaiting gifts from St. Nicholas on December 6th. Sometimes the story is told with gold balls instead of bags of gold. This is why three gold balls are one of the symbols for St. Nicholas. It's also the origin of the three gold balls that you can sometimes still see hanging outside of pawn shops. St. Nicholas Day was celebrated on the anniversary of his death beginning in 13th century France. So it looks like the first part of our modern Christmas to become popular was the gift-giving associated with St. Nicholas, but not any story about the birth of Jesus. Now, when you combine gifts with a religious holiday, that's like combining fireworks with the celebration of our nation's Declaration of Independence on the 4th of July. Guess which one will trump the other one? Some people in this country were giving gifts for St. Nicholas Day, which had become a completely secular holiday, but a beloved one. I have a side story. A good friend of mine is Mennonite. Her family goes back to the very first generation of Mennonites in the 16th century, and they, like some of the Jehovah's Witnesses and fundamentalists, were very clear growing up that this business of giving gifts and greenery and candles and all this kind of stuff was totally pagan. However, the kids were also in school, they had peer pressure, everybody else was celebrating it, and so their family came up with a creative solution and a secret. And the creative solution was that they also gave gifts. The secret was they gave them on December 6th, and then the kids didn't talk about them for three more weeks until the rest of their friends had gotten their presents. And this made it special because they got their presents before all their other friends did, though they had to keep them secret. And then on December 24th and 25th, the family gathered around the piano, they sang hymns, they read scripture, and they had wonderful meals together. That's pretty close to the best of both worlds, I think. By the end of the 19th century, merchants had succeeded in getting people to combine St. Nicholas Day and Christmas and to give gifts for Christmas to help focus the shopping season. That drives a lot of things in this season. Earlier, Christmas gifts were almost always made by hand. My friend said in her family that's the only kind of gifts that were allowed. Gifts that you had cared enough about someone else to make for them. Isn't that something? But between about 1880 and 1920, we got sold on the idea that we should buy presents and that they should be gift-wrapped in fancy paper. In the 1930s, merchants got President Franklin Roosevelt to move Thanksgiving back from its former official date of November 30th. And he moved it back to November 23rd so there would be a longer Christmas shopping season. A few years later, Congress made Thanksgiving the fourth Thursday in November, still moving it back. And so the Christmas shopping season has officially started the day after Thanksgiving since then, though it seems now that Christmas ads start after Halloween or the 4th of July. Now, you notice so far, Jesus, God, or Christianity haven't been mentioned. Our modern Christmas was begun by storytellers, cartoonists, and merchants, creating a shopping season that's the most profitable time of the year for them. It features holly, ivy, mistletoe, evergreens, fir trees, and the lights and fires and parties that go back to before Christianity existed, probably before any religion existed. But also notice that none of these stories talk about the winter solstice either. That's not either the real reason for the season. Our favorite Christmas music isn't religious either, though our favorite music comes at Christmas. You may know, you may not know, the number one selling record of all time is still Bing Crosby's 1942 version of White Christmas. And the number two selling record of all time is still Gene Autry's 1949 recording of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. These are the Christmas spirits. The single most important thing done to establish our picture, our image of old Santa Claus as the fat guy with the white beard and the red suit with white fur was not the political cartoonist Thomas Nast who started it, but another commercial artist. Some of us here grew up with this, but all of you have seen this. For 33 years, from 1931 through 1964, the Coca-Cola Company published ads picturing this fat Santa in his red suit and white fur holding a Coke. Red and white just happened to be their colors, too. Then in 1947, we got help from another storyteller when Dr. Seuss published The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, which was kind of a cartoon version of the Scrooge character. But again, the Christmas spirit that the Grinch had tried to steal wasn't about religion. It was about parties and celebration and giving presents and having a wonderful time together. That's the spirit we don't want killed. Today, Christmas has become an almost completely secular holiday, and that even seems to be becoming the law. In 1999, a U.S. district court ruled that Christmas decorations didn't violate anybody's religious beliefs because, in the words of the court, the Christian holiday has become almost completely secularized. It's a holiday open to everyone, regardless of beliefs. Now, that's interesting. So all the focus on gifts and merriment, meals with friends, singing, evergreens, mistletoe, it isn't distracting from the reason of the season. It is the reason for the season. And it has been for thousands of years. From all the ancient and modern histories, whether around Rome or around the U.S., it looks like the real reason for the season was the need to celebrate, the need to get together with family and friends, to surround ourselves with fun and merriment, and just to come alive. That's a victory of the human spirit. What this season's been about since prehistoric times is coming alive. We read that the old Roman Saturnalia had parties, drinking, good food, singing, dancing, and laughter. And people say that as though that were a bad thing. But remember, most of this partying was done with their families and their friends. The winter solstice was an excuse for it, just as the 4th of July is an excuse for shooting off fireworks. But the solstice wasn't the real reason, any more than any holiday is. We love holidays because they give us permission to come alive more theatrically and more openly than we can do the rest of the year without being seen as a bit odd. During 4th of July fireworks displays, all those oohs, ahs, those aren't in memory of a bunch of men signing a Declaration of Independence. Those are the delighted gasps of our inner children, thrilled with being alive and being together. And that's the real reason for the Christmas season, too. I keep thinking of some wonderful words from the theologian Howard Thurman when he said, "Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do it. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive." I had never thought of those words as having anything to do with Christmas, and I doubt that he ever thought of them that way either. But they are about what the season is about. This is the most creative, positive, and human of all our holidays. I think about this. Many centuries ago, some people were facing another solstice season. It was dark. It was probably cold. The days were short. The nights were long. And it might look like the end of the world. They knew it wasn't. The world isn't likely to end unless we boil it away or blow it apart. But once they started lighting fires, somebody got a very creative idea. Let's have a party. They slaughtered their cattle in the middle of winter routinely so they wouldn't have to feed them through the winter. So they had lots of food. The wine that they'd brewed in the summer was fermented now. What great timing. So everything in nature has prepared them for a wonderful party in the middle of winter. It's like they said, "Let's do an in-your-face to nature by having our biggest, brightest party right in the middle of the darkest days." It's wonderfully creative. The best parts of nature have always been claimed by the mythmakers of the day for their particular story. And so, what the season's about would depend on when you lived and where you lived. In ancient Rome, the mythmakers said that what was really going on here is the birth of the invincible sun. Or you could hear in other circles that actually it was the birth of Mithras, the sun god and the son of God. Disciples of Apollo would say, "No, it's all about Apollo, dopes." And they might even tell you that the reason the sun even comes up at all in the morning is because Apollo hauls it behind his chariot every day across the sky. Christian mythmakers said, "No, this is the celebration of the birth of another son of God named Jesus that happened to come on the same birthday as all those other sun gods." And then they connected it with the earlier story about Joseph and Mary and a wandering star and shepherds and wise men and all the rest of it. God, those are wonderful stories. These are all far more imaginative and magical stories than the truth. Because the truth is just that days will start getting longer in a couple of weeks, just like they always do. And then in June, they'll start getting shorter again as the natural cycle continues the way it's been doing on this planet for about 4 billion years. This is not an exciting story. Meanwhile, back here on Earth, a lot of people are getting ready to party. They're preparing a menu, inviting friends, deciding on the right gifts for the right people, whether they make them or buy them. They're picking up fancy wrapping paper, hanging all sorts of things on real or artificial green trees, or silver trees, or trees of some other color. A lot like people did in ancient Rome, and in the communities of Mithraism, the fir tree was Mithra's sacred tree. That's the real reason for the season. A rare chance to come alive, to celebrate the gift of life by offering gifts to those in life who mean a lot to you. A chance for good food, good friends, and family who, if we can't quite love having them around for the whole holidays, can at least tolerate them in good humor. It's a time to get out not only our best behaviors, but some of our silliest and most childlike ones, too. God, this is the season when full-grown people talk about flying reindeer and get in long lines and pay good money to see that ballet with mice who dance and a magical nutcracker who comes to life. Comes to life. That's it. The real reason for this season has always been coming back to life. Not coming to worship the invincible sun. Not coming to Mithras. Not coming to Jesus. But coming to life. And all the stories, music, costumes, decorations, and parties are like training wheels for us. To help us get back into that habit of being more alive. A habit we seem to slip out of so easily that it's a good thing we've arranged this annual reminder that more than anything, what the world needs is people who have come alive.